And we're taking up the question in Shmos, Perek Vav Pasuk Yud. On the surface, it seems a little bit difficult, because this is already after Moshe Rabbeinu has accepted the mission and has returned to Mitzrayim. And we know the initial encounter with Paro led to a setback. But they suffered a setback in that Paro made the work harder. And then the Parsha Shmos ends with the Shotrim. They interceded, they made a request of Paro. They tried to get him to change the decree. And he blamed it on Moshe Rabbeinu. Paro blamed it on Moshe Rabbeinu. That it has to do with the fact that you're lazy and you don't want to work. And that's why this whole request that you should be able to leave the land and serve your God, it's just a ruse. It's because you don't want to do the work, and therefore he's going to make the work harder. So it was in direct response to what Moshe had done. So they encountered Moshe, and they complained to Moshe that that this whole thing is a crazy idea. All you've done is to give Paro a sword or an excuse to make it harder for us. So then Moshe Rabbeinu complains to Hashem that Lama Harayosa, why did you make things worse for the people, and why did you send me from the time that I came here? It's only gotten worse. So that's the way Parsha Shmos ends. Now in Vayera, so Hashem appears to Moshe, speaks to Moshe, and Va'era al Avram al Yitzchak b'kel shakai u'shmi Hashem lo nodati lahem. So that's something which has to be, understood. What's the significance of the different names, and what does it mean that lo nodati lahem? Can't be taken literally that the Avos didn't know the name, the Shem Hashem. That wouldn't make it. First of all, I think the Ramban brings it out that clearly they referred to Hashem. They make use of that shame. It would also be difficult to imagine that this is fundamental. The whole Yesod of Yadus is the Shem Hashem, the proper idea of God, that the Avos wouldn't know it. Avram Avinu is the one who discovered the creator of the universe. So we're not going into that particular area right now, but it's all the commentaries, Ramban, etc., explain that it's lo nodati. Doesn't mean that they didn't know the name itself, but in terms of the manifestation, so to speak, that it has a certain connotation in terms of God's relationship to the universe, and God did not reveal, in terms of Gilu Shechina, the revelation, the Gilu Shechina that's associated with the Shem Hashem, they did not experience it. And then it goes on. Then Hashem goes on. Begam hakimosi yestrisi itam. And I've established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their sojourns, that they sojourned in. There's a lot of agams over here. It's not clear what the purpose of this message is, in contradistinction to the original message that Hashem had given to Moshe at the Sneh, the burning bush. And Gamani Shamati es Nakas Bnei Yisrael. I've heard the cries of Bnei Yisrael, Hashem Etzrayim Mavidim Osam, Ve'eskar Es Barisi. And, the affliction of the enslavement of the Egyptians, and I have remembered the bris. That is to say that the purpose is to fulfill the conditions of the bris. This seems to be, again, repetitive. The basic idea, Hashem said to Moshe at the Sneh, "Lachein emor levnei Yisrael, ani Hashem." Therefore, say to Bnei Yisrael, "Ani Hashem, v'otzeisi eschem itachas sivlos Mitzrayim, v'itzalti eschem me'avodasam, v'ga'alti eschem v'zerah netuya, u'v'shvatim gedolim." in chapter 3, in Perek Gimel, at the snare, where the first statement of Hashem, Anochi Elokei Avicha, I'm the God of your fathers, God of Avram, God of Yisrael, God of Yaakov. And Ro'o Ro'isi Es Oni Ami, Yashev Mitzrayim, the Sakos and Shemaitim Nei Nogsov, Ki Adati Es Machovov. So the idea that that the Jewish people are God's nation, and that God has heard their screams from before their oppressors. I know their pains. And va'ered, going down, so to speak, obviously, to intercede, to intervene, to save them from Mitzrayim, to bring them up to the land of, which is goodly land of milk and honey, etc. And then tzakas b'nei Yisrael bo'elai, and I've seen their affliction. And now go, and I'm going to send you to Paro. The basic idea is, it doesn't mention specifically the bris, but I'm not saying every word is identical, but the basic idea seems to be there already. That's the God of your father, so that's the bris, and they're my people, and they're going through the affliction, and I'm going to rescue them, and take them out, and to establish them as a nation, and bring them to the land. Well, all the ideas in general seem to be there. Doesn't seem to be anything new. Well, what is new, the main communication, what is new, is Uvashmi Hashem Lonadati Lahem. So that seems to be something which I'm not sure that was stated then. But here it's a reference to the Gilui Shechina. But other than that, the Vagams seem to be repetitive. I will establish my covenant. I mean, is that new? Well, actually, Hakimosi is the past tense. Rashi says, and also when I appeared to them, Bekel Shakai, I established my covenant between me and them. And, well, is that a new idea? I'm not sure what's new. You'd have to look into that. And then, Shamati Esnakas, B'nai Yisrael. I've heard their cries. And therefore go and tell them, Ani Hashem Votzeis Yeschem, that's already, he told them that already. That idea that, to go and tell them that the God of their fathers has appeared to him. That's in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Tes Zayin. Lech v'yasafta. Go and gather the Ziknei Yisrael, the elders, and say to them, Hashem Elokei Avoseichem, the God of your fathers, has appeared to me, saying, Pakod Pakarati Eschem. I've remembered you. And what was done to you in Egypt. And I'm going to bring you up from the land of Mitzrayim to the land of the Kanani, Achiti, etc., Eretz Chol Vadvash, v'shamulu kalecha, and they'll listen to you. And then you'll go, you and the Zakenim, to the king of Egypt, and say to him that the Gael Akeo Ivrim Nikraleinu, that the God of the Ivrim has encountered us, and now let us go 3 days, and so forth. So the basic idea that Hashem has remembered them, and is going to remove them. All of that is seems to be done already. Because it says that Moshe went. Then it says that Moshe returned. And went down to Mitzrayim. Ah, then you have the story about the Molon, what occurred. But when he got back, so first he meets up with Aaron, and he tells him everything, the whole the message of Hashem. Then it says the Moshe and Aaron went, and they gathered the Ziknei Yisrael, and Aaron spoke these things, that Hashem had said to Moshe, and he did the osos, and vayaminam, and the people believed. Vayishmu, they heard, kipaka Hashem es bnei Yisrael, that God remembered the bnei Yisrael, and he has seen their affliction. And they bowed. They kneeled and they bowed. That was Hodaya. I'm just going to try and give like a general context for what's going on over here. Of course, you have to go specifically into the Mefarshim and work out the particulars. But just as a general orientation, I think it goes back to what took place in Shemos. Something happened. It's very significant that Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro, and he himself was surprised. Apparently Hashem had not prepared him for that. Because everybody asks the question that Hashem had told him that Paro would not give permission to leave, except for B'yad Chazaka. God had prepared Moshe for that. That it would be a process. Not necessarily that long. I think the Ramban says that everything took place within a year from the time that Moshe returned. But it wouldn't happen immediately, that he's just going to go to Paro, and Paro is his mighty ruler, and demand that God said to let them go 3 days, and that Paro would just accept. It's not going to happen. It's going to take force. That's what Hashem told him. So Moshe knew that. Nevertheless, he had to go through the steps. He had to speak to the king. He had to go through the motions, but he sort of knew that a lot of times you do that. In certain situations where you have negotiations, you want to bring about changes, and you kind of know that you're going to present the case. You don't expect it to be accepted, but that's step one. Hopefully something will get their attention, and that'll lead to step two, and so on and so forth. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to know that just by going to Paro and telling him that the creator of the universe has said to let his people go and serve him for 3 days and so forth, that it wouldn't be accepted. But clearly, that wasn't the point. What Moshe did not know, apparently, was that the situation would actually get worse. That it would seem Hashem withheld from him. You have to say that if Moshe knew that that was the plan, that it was actually going to get worse before it got better, then what's he going to complain about? That is something that was unanticipated. And you could see, it wasn't just that the situation got worse. It's one thing for a situation to get worse. But a leader has to contend with that. When you assume leadership, and part of the idea, in that situation, you have a group of people that are being oppressed. And part of the reason that they're oppressed is that they've come to accept it, that they've been beaten down. And just to instill a fighting spirit that they should resist is not easy. So when somebody tries to do that, you're always going to encounter a certain resistance, that we're better off going along with this. You see, even in the Midbar, when things got worse, whenever there was a crisis and things got worse, there were those people that said we would have been better off staying there. It's difficult for us to see that because we're not in that situation. But that's the way it is. People have fears. And whatever the situation was, if they felt that there was some security, they were able to live with it, even though it was not a good situation. So that's the problem. People are going to always prefer not to take those kind of risks. Fear. So Moshe Rabbeinu had to overcome that. But the setback was a disaster, so to speak, in terms of his connection to the people. Like I said, it was not just that things got a little bit worse. Let's say things got worse. But it may not be that because of you. It just so happens that, let's say the decree about the straw and all of that would have gone into effect, not because of a response to Moshe. They'll say it wouldn't have had it would have been bad and so on and so forth. But that's one kind of a thing. But they still have hope. That's because Moshe hasn't set the plan into motion yet. But it was a result of the very plan. So that will only strengthen the resistance that people have, that this is crazy. How can we stand up against Pyro? So you're just going to make it worse. So the best thing is to go along with it. I mean, you see the way these Shotrim, when they pleaded with Pyro, they sounded like very loyal, and this decree makes it impossible, and we're going to be sinners because of this. They want to fulfill the quota, but you're making it impossible for us. And then he slams them. That's because you people are involved with these crazy ideas. So it's a direct result of what Moshe is doing. And thus, it's going to just destroy the spirit of the people. That this was a crazy idea. Of course, we can ask, I don't know if we can have an answer, but why? This was not revealed to Moshe. And why did it have to be this way? Because Hashem says, Atta, now you'll see. Atta Sira. It seems like when God answers Moshe, God doesn't rebuke Moshe. And Chazal criticize him indirectly, that comparing him to the Avos, that they were not Maharer. That the Avos, when things went bad for them, like Avram, there was a famine, he had to leave the land. They were never Maharer. They didn't question God's ways. And Moshe is sort of questioning God's ways. But this seems to be part of the plan. Because God says, now, Atta. The implication, Atta, now you'll see what I'm going to do to Pharaoh. That is, it's not going to, it seems basically, it's not going to get any worse. And from this point on, things are going to start to get better. Atta, now. But the implication is that this had to happen. But why? Can we ask that question, why? I'm just going to provide a suggestion for what it's worth, to be considered, is that perhaps, this is a thought that occurred to me, that there's a purpose in the worsening of the situation. And that is that ultimately, as we see, the Geula, when the Geula does come, there's many aspects to the Geula. For example, we spoke about the matzah, quoting from the Rav, that the significance of the matzah, that it reflects the idea that when the Geula came, it comes very suddenly. That's the whole idea of the matzah, that there's no time, that it didn't have time to rise. He speaks about this. We'll get to it. We'll get closer to Pesach. And that is, anything that's natural processes take time. But Yeshua's Hashem is clarifying that when God intercedes, it's done in a manner which is contrary to any natural procedure. It's immediate. And things don't happen that way. That's very, very important, because it should be clear to people that what took place is not part of the natural order, is not the natural process, but it's from Hashem. So that's a vital idea in the Geula, that it has to be done in a manner which leaves no room for doubt that this is not the natural order. This is Hashem. Okay? Now, if that's the case, it seems to me that when Moshe comes into the picture and he rallies the people, so they have a sense of hope. They've been downtrodden, and it seems like Hashem has forgotten them, quote unquote, you know, so to speak, doesn't care about them. And now Moshe comes with this message. So they hear. And they listen. And then they start to go. Now I'm suggesting that, let's say from the time that Moshe went to Paro, things began to change, or they didn't get any worse, and then the dialogue continues. If that's the case, then you see, people are skeptical. People are always skeptical. Like, a lot of times people are afraid to make a move. They'll stay in a certain situation. They're afraid. They're afraid in many places. They won't, or a worker, he's afraid to ask for a raise. He's sort of a certain timid attitude, and he's kind of afraid that if he speaks up, if he complains, then they'll get rid of him. Now, let's say he's persuaded, he finally does it. And it works. So then he looks back and he says that he was ridiculous, that his whole estimate of the situation was wrong. That if I would have asked a few years ago, I could have improved. That is, I had a wrong estimate of the situation. So it seems to me that had Moshe intervened and whatever, and then the situation started to get better, so many people would say, well, it's the natural order. We were wrong, we were cowards, this, that, whatever it is, but you see, as soon as we asserted ourselves, we had to assert ourselves. So they could have said that it's a natural phenomenon, that we were downtrodden and we were afraid, but for example, this happens all the time with World War II, when Hitler tried to create the myth of invincibility, and people are intimidated. And today, you know, the terrorists also, they try to create a myth of invincibility, and people are afraid. And that you see the whole mentality that that's where appeasement comes from. Appeasement is rooted in that idea. But then you see, when somebody strikes back, and of course they have no choice or whatever it is, and then you break through and then you destroy them, then you see that it was all in your mind. It was a myth. You break down the myth of invincibility. It's very, very important. It's a big factor in many areas, even in sports. A certain team has that myth of invincibility. It intimidates virtually until somebody breaks through and whips them, whatever, and then you see, they're no different. It's a myth of invincibility. Even if they're good and strong, but they're not invincible. Those things are invincibility. So, therefore, if it would have been successful from the outset, or even if it didn't get any worse, so then they might have that doubt. They might have that doubt that maybe they just had this. We were weak. They took advantage of us. They weren't. But once the situation got worse, the situation had to get worse. And not only that, as a result of the very intercession, there was no goodness in Paro. There was no response to the diplomacy. It was purely, they had to see the total evil of Paro, his total evil, and his absolute commitment to not let them go, and that he wasn't afraid, not even a fear of God. So that any one of these elements, they could have said, oh, maybe he was just afraid. It had to be absolutely clear to them. Atasira. Now you'll see that, because now the situation is the way it has to be, so that the Jews will recognize that it can only be the Yad Hashem and nothing else. So that's why in Va'era, Hashem charged Moshe to return to the Jews, because they were now demoralized. The Jews had been demoralized. And they needed another communication from Hashem, that they shouldn't despair, that they shouldn't come to any kinds of conclusions because of the situation of the moment, but to hearken back to the bris. That's the most significant thing. The Rambam in his letters to the communities, different communities that were going through decrees and suffering, and the Goyim were telling them that that's because your God has rejected you, and they were in a state of despair. So that the Rambam, you have to hearken back to the foundations, to tell them about Torah Misinai, and because of Torah Misinai, it's an eternal covenant, and you can't base yourself on the situation of the moment, but you have to be fortified in terms of the Amunah in the basic principles. So that's the idea of the bris, that he tells them to go back now, Vagam, that this is the situation. That I appeared to the Avos in one way, but this is going to be a different type of Gilui Shechina, and I established a covenant with them, and now the covenant is going to be fulfilled. And the Jews have to be capable of hearing and accepting that now, in spite of the fact that, to all intents and purposes, it looks the opposite. That those ideas only led to a disaster. But you can't base yourself on that.
Yep.
Yep. The fact that questions being asked, well, why did it have to get worse? They're going to see the Makos and all of that. That's true. But in spite of seeing all those things, there's still plenty of room for denial. And the Jews, even the Jews, not all the Jews believed in Moshe, and then later on in the Midbar, then they distort the picture, what the significance is. So that you could always say it was a combination of factors. Or you know, like the Egyptians. This is part of the natural order. We just don't understand these things. The orientation of the individual has to be appropriate. Yeah, why did he have to teach them all these things? Why didn't he just do the Makos and take the Jews out? That would have been clear. The answer is it wouldn't have been clear. That miracles can only do so much. And the very manner in which they are interpreted and the significance depends upon the person's orientation. You can't just go and do miracles. You have to have a certain orientation. Even if a person agrees that something is a miracle, but what's the meaning of that miracle? What's the idea behind the miracle? So that's what I'm saying, is that it had to be absolutely, you see, even so why did, if that's the case, why did the Geula have to come about in that sudden manner and so on and so forth? It's clear that this is a miracle. It's not so clear. And there's the element of denial in people. So that that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to explain this along the same lines as the fact that the Geula occurs, Beharif Ayin, and so on and so forth, that this is another factor, that the situation had to achieve a certain level of, it had to worsen to a certain point where no one could make the argument that there was a successful negotiation, that there was concessions and so on and so forth, that Paro saw the error of his ways. But no, that the negotiation itself would really fail. It made things worse, and it was only the Yad Hashem that would take them out. It's a general orientation. That's why we could see in Parshas Va'era that Moshe has to be charged back to Bnei Yisrael to rekindle their spirit, so to speak. I mean, you see that I throughout history, especially the time of the Rambam, communities were in despair, and there's always this need, but people lose sight of the basic fundamentals. And there's always this need to restore the strength of the people. But the way to do so is to have a emunah shlema in the fundamentals, in the idea of the bris avos, that it's an eternal bris. That's what I think he was communicating to them, to strengthen them.